Hello there. My name is Lois Richter. The program is That's Life. And I hope you're enjoying this wonderful day. We are recording this live on the 28th of January, 2018. So the information you're going to get is timely for that time. I always say that at the beginning if it's something that isn't going to be pertinent forever. The program's called That's Life because I like to talk to people about what they do to help you get to know your neighbors and things like that. And sometimes I run music and sometimes we play songs, but usually it's just an interview. So what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to play another song. These are from Margie Adams and the program, Naked Keys is the name of the album. So here we go with some more from Naked Keys by Margie Adams. And thank you, Margie, for that lovely music. So my guest has arrived now, and we're just getting him settled in front of the microphone. So as long as you can see me, and that microphone is within that far of your mouth, so move the microphone toward you. Don't lean in, just move the mic up there. That sounds good. Looks good. Looking good. So I'm going to introduce this person whom I've not met until today. His first name is Rhys, and that's spelled R-H-Y-S. Oh, that sounds like it's something to do with plant life.
Exactly.
Hold on. Get that microphone on there. Oh. And the last name is Rowland or Roland?
Roland.
R-O-W-L-A-N-D, Roland.
Yes.
Okay, Rhys Roland. Well, Rhys, thank you for joining us at the last moment. To the listeners, we had a program scheduled. John McNerney from the city was going to come and talk about docent training for people who want to go out and be docents at the wetlands. But he had a conflict. He had a meeting he had to go to all of a sudden. And so he talked Rhys into coming. And Rhys is also from the city of Davis. And what is your exact title?
My title is Environmental Program Specialist.
All right. And he said you were going to come and talk to me about stormwater pollution prevention, which sounds, well, pretty yucky. but
can be.
So is that primarily what you're working on these days, is stormwaters?
Yeah, we have several people within my division within Public Works, which are the same title as I am. However, we work on different aspects of sort of the pollution stream. Mm-hmm. I work on the stormwater side of things. We have another individual who works on the wastewater side of things.
And what's the difference between stormwater and wastewater?
Stormwater would be pretty much everything that falls from the sky and then rolls off of our roofs onto paving sidewalks, the public street, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And that's a separate stream of water from the wastewater stream that flows eventually to our local waterways out to the Sacramento River.
Okay, so the stormwater is coming from outside, and it's going into those drains that we see around the city, mm-hmm. around the sides of the roads and stuff, and then it goes underground through underground tunnels.
For the most part.
Canals and stuff. Well, and then it goes out towards, and eventually it ends up dumping into the ocean.
Ultimately, yes.
Okay. Yeah. And then the wastewater is the stuff that comes from the inside of your house.
Exactly.
And all the water from the inside of your house, whether you're washing dishes or you're flushing the toilet or you're taking a shower, that's all in the same wastewater?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And that goes into pipes, and that's containerized the entire way out, right?
Right.
And then where does that go?
That goes to the city's wastewater treatment plant.
And then it gets treated over there, and then eventually that water gets done something else with. But it is a separate stream.
That's correct.
All right.
Yes.
All right. Now that we've got that clarified, so you're dealing with the stuff that falls in our roofs and runs off our gardens and comes from the
exactly.
street.
Yeah.
So rain is pretty clean, but I know that there's a lot of people who put a lot of yucky stuff on their gardens and their lawns and stuff. So you must get lots of chemicals and things. And then, of course, there's all that oil and sludge from the cars.
Right.
So stormwater isn't as clean as one might think when you think it's just rainwater.
Right. We put all around the city. We have some 3,100 drainage inlets around the city. We mark them with a little marker that says rainwater only.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty difficult when we have a lot of different activities that we do that can contribute to, you know, the pollutant stream that mm-hmm. actually ends up in those waters. And they don't get treated before they make their way to places where wildlife mm-hmm. Occurs, you know, aquatic plants and aquatic wildlife.
I've seen some mm-hmm. places little signs that say, "This, you know, don't kill the fish. This
right.
this goes to the ocean." Does ours actually ever get to the ocean, or does it end up in lakes and stuff closer on?
So the stream, most of the water on the north side of the city, I kind of had thought about talking a little bit about our drainage system.
Mm-hmm.
Our drainage system, most of the north portions of the city, including where we sit now, that water eventually ends up draining almost to the wastewater treatment plant. It actually bypasses that in a little canal
mm-hmm.
next to what's known as the Willow Slough Bypass.
Mm-hmm. That's County Road 28H?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, you got it.
I'm a birder. I know where these things are.
So it flows eastward mm-hmm. on the north side of the channel, essentially into what's known as the Davis Wetlands.
Mm-hmm.
And it sits in the south cell of the wetlands, which is entirely composed of, again, stormwater. The north cell is composed entirely of wastewater.
Treated wastewater.
Yes, exactly.
Very well treated wastewater, yes. Folks.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it sits there, and once we get enough water, we may get a discharge from that. And again, that's clean water. It meets all the federal standards and
mm-hmm.
so forth. On the stormwater side of things, the treatment that it's getting is through the naturalized channel, ostensibly Channel A, flows out of the northeast side of the city from Wild Horse. If you take the Greenbelt buffer.
That's the stormwater? This is
mm-hmm.
stormwater one. Okay.
Yeah. The Greenbelt buffer, there's a little bridge
mm-hmm.
on the very northeast side of the golf course.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually see there's a little canal that flows out of there, and that water flows through vegetation. It's a very naturalized channel. Some of it evaporates. Some of it infiltrates into the ground. Some of it gets transpirated up into the vegetation that exists
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
So in general, the water that makes its way into the waste, the wetlands, is
mm-hmm.
actually pretty clean, fairly clean.
Okay.
Despite whatever else we might put in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the you said that's the north half of the city. Then that's
mm-hmm.
down below the freeway. It
exactly.
goes a different route.
Right. And actually, there's a little bit here on the north side that actually does flow east along the freeway,
uh-huh.
I-80, and then flows underneath a flapper gate, underneath
mm-hmm.
the levees out there, directly into the Yellow Bypass.
Oh, and that, yeah. I thought that there was a levee there that it couldn't go through.
In this case, that one canal can. Now we do have.
How does that work? I mean, it can't. It's not got like locks getting it up and over the levee, does it?
Right, right.
How does it get in?
So you get enough pressure behind the gate, and it opens up the gate, and then the water just flows out.
I see what you're saying.
Once you get enough elevation,
it's a flap. Yeah. It's a one-way flap.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's not an uncommon process that's been used for stormwater for years and years and years.
And how often do they test it to make sure that it'll stand up to the pressure coming the other way in one of our high storms and high water seasons?
You get that much water, you know, then generally, you know, there's no assurance that it's going to necessarily mm-hmm. close and come the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. Although, if you have higher elevation of water on the other side of the levee, which you could have in the Yolo Bypass, that pressure of water basically keeps the flapper gate closed.
Okay.
I'm not an expert in that realm, but
I know. I remember years when I've mm-hmm. gone over to the levee and the water was like within feet of the top of it. In fact, it was slapping the bottom of the freeway road.
Yeah,
and that's a tall bridge out there.
Yeah, so it's purely physics.
Yeah, you know, purely
it's just,
physics. Okay.
Yeah, it's just a matter of pressure on one side versus the other. You know,
okay,
and it can't go the other direction. The flapper gate can only be open.
Right,
and you have to have more pressure on the other side for it to open.
Right,
on the Yolo Bypass side, it can't open inward and go in the other direction.
Right.
Yeah.
But it means that it wouldn't be draining if the water gets so high on the causeway side.
Exactly.
That is that why we sometimes have a little lake out there at the where the freeway comes off of the levee and I-80 comes over there? And there's that, you know, where the Yolo food place, the market is. And there's that little mm-hmm. loop road that goes underneath mm-hmm. the bridge there. And some winters, that little area turns into a lake. Is that because the flapper gate is not opening to drain it?
I don't think so. I again, that's outside my area of expertise.
Oh, okay.
My guess is that's just drainage off the roadway, you mm-hmm. know, the highway itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just a lot of water.
Right, just a lot of water.
Okay, so if this stormwater is totally untreated. It's just flowing from the heavens to my roof, to my lawn, to my yard, to the street, to underneath the street, to out those channels, to whatever ditch, to wherever it goes. It's just flowing. That's what it's doing. Then how can you do pollution prevention? I mean, that's what we're talking about here, is pollution prevention.
Ultimately.
What kind of pollution do you get, and how do you make it not happen?
Well, you know, so there's common, let me clarify. I've been doing this since about 2009 for the city.
Mm-hmm.
In my experience and what I've seen, you know, I've garnered, you know, observations over mm-hmm. time. And typically what I see are really kind of the same types of pollutants through our activities. Construction sites, mm-hmm. for example. They often are bare, right? There's no structure.
Mm-hmm.
Often, if there was something there, it's been ground up and removed, and you may have bare soil then mm-hmm. that's existing. If you get enough rain, that can drag soil off the site. So one of the things that we ask construction sites to do is put in what we call erosion and sediment control. So what that might entail is something called like a silt fence, where water can go in one direction, but it's not generally going to come off the other or go back in the other direction. And it also then retains all the soil in place.
Is that those like straw snakes?
That would be a straw wattle, and that's another pollution prevention or erosion and sediment control device that we commonly ask.
So what is a silt fence that you talked about?
It's another
perimeter.
Like? So it would be a small fence, usually maybe black in color,
uh-huh.
maybe about a foot tall. And it's usually dug down into the soil, maybe 3-4 inches below the soil.
Uh-huh.
And it sits right on the perimeter of the project, usually bordering up against the backside of a sidewalk, say, for
uh-huh.
example, or a curb and gutter, if that's all you've got. And again, it's intended to allow water to travel off the site, but retain the soil in place. So it's very
porous. Plastic is because yes. I was thinking like a waterbed, and I'm going, well, that's just going to bulge.
right.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a porous thing, like landscapers cloth that we use in gardens and things like that. Okay.
Yeah, like a weed cloth. So it's very fine, very small holes in it. Very.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure what the word is to call that.
Porous is perfect.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
More like low density or high density, in terms of, the amount of porosity it has.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. All right. So if dirt were to get into the system, how is that a pollutant?
Well, for example,
it's poisonous.
In nature, right, we have vegetation in place. We have rocks, trees ostensibly holding soil in place. Uh-huh. And in general, we have, enough surface area that the water tends to sit directly on top of the soil and it gets absorbed.
Right.
Once the soil becomes saturated, which takes a lot of rain, by the way, to do, a lot of rain, that water might flow in directions off that. The more it can channel into, small areas, it can create a lot of energy, and then it can pick up soil. And then that can be dragged into a waterway. So when you go out into mountainous areas where you don't have necessarily a lot of impervious surfaces, you'll see waterways are generally very clear. The problem is that down here in the lower areas and many places where we just do development in general, we create impervious surfacing. And the impervious surfacing causes the water to not infiltrate into the ground, so we get more water than we would have in natural situations. And it flows off those impervious surfaces with high energy. It's traveling much faster than it would. So it tends to pick up that sediment and so forth that would not normally be in place in the water. And so with your aquatic wildlife and your aquatic plants, they have evolved over thousands of years in a setting that was contrary to what we've essentially developed in the last 100, 150 years or so.
So you're talking about smothering things downstream. That's pretty much what we're talking about, smothering aquatic plants or harming the ducks and things that are drinking the water and that kind of. So it's a physical action rather than a chemical reaction.
In the case of suspended sediments, something they call or refer to at the state level, they refer to it as TSS, total suspended sediments.
Okay.
More often than not, it has to do with navigation, at least for aquatic wildlife.
Okay.
In terms of aquatic plant life, I'm not clear on a biological level what it does.
Okay.
Ostensibly, it's something that the state has said, hey, this is a pollutant, and it causes adverse conditions for aquatic wildlife. So we need to regulate it, and it's one of the things we're required to look at.
So I was originally thinking that the problem would be that it would clog up the drains or the tunnels underneath the city, and then things would back up and make a swamp and that sort of thing. But what I'm hearing you saying is we're talking about finer particles that are getting out there and causing problems.
Right, and they remain suspended, because they're light. They remain suspended in the water for long periods of time.
So other than soil, what other kinds of pollutants are of concern, and what do you do about them?
Well, you named a few of them early on in our conversation. Things like when people will do yard work. Residents do yard work in their yards. They may use fertilizers. They may use pesticides to eradicate pests, or at least try to control pests. Could be insects, could be weeds, or things like that. Other things would be, fertilizers to help your lawn grow better. If you're not using some sort of a organic compost or other kind of natural type of fertilizer, you get enough rainwater. Those run off our lawns, they run off our yards because they're all sloped to drain to the street. And ostensibly, again, because we have roofs and things like that, they tend to roll across our landscaping with higher energy than they might normally in natural systems. And it drags with it those things that we use in our yards, whether
it's
insecticides.
So we've got all these chemicals in the water now.
Yeah, right.
So what can you do about that?
Well, in those kinds of situations, we just try to educate people, try to be aware that these things are bad. Obviously, they create toxicity type situations. If they kill pests in your yard, they're going to certainly kill natural occurring species in the waterways, whether it be plants or wildlife, right? And they tend to persist for long periods of times also in the waterways. There's a thing that they refer to at the state level, they call persistent organic pesticides. And some of these things are things we used many, many years ago. Agriculture, you know, is another place where a lot of those things are used. So it's a human activity.
I'm remembering the DDT that thinned out the shells of the raptors, and so we were losing bald eagles.
So those kinds of things can have adverse, you know, impacts in the environment. And so what we try to do is we try to educate people that using products that contain these types of chemicals are harmful. And what we try to do is help them make the choice to use some other kind of product. In that regard,
Learn how the problem is, and address it by looking at the problem rather than spraying automatically. Now you're preaching to the choir here, because Don Shore and I do the Davis Garden Show, and we are always talking about situations where people have, where there's something that they don't like, and they want to find something to spray for it, and half the time. At least half the time, the thing that's the problem is either going to go away on its own, so spraying for it won't make it go away any faster, or it's something where there is no solution for it, and it's simply a bad choice of a particular plant in that particular spot or something. So, yeah, we deal with this all the time and try and tell people, like aphids. You got aphids. It's spring. You got aphids on your roses. Well, yes, you do. You have aphids. And in a week, you're going to have aphid eaters.
Yeah.
And, you know, pretty soon you won't notice any aphids anymore because they'll, you know, this is a normal cycle. You know, if it bothers you in the meantime, hose it off. Aphids falling to the ground are not going to make it into your stormwater drains because they're just going to fall onto the ground.
Well, yeah.
They're going to get swept away by a stream or something.
It's a natural critter, essentially, too, or a pest. It's not going to cause a problem in stormwater runoff, ostensibly naturally occurring in the wildlife, right, or in nature. There is an organization called Our Water, Our World. It's a nonprofit, and they put out a lot of what they call BMP, Best Management Practice, fact sheets on a lot of products and methods you can use to use less toxic alternatives. And we supply a lot of their material. We put them actually in Redwood Barn Nursery. We put them in Davis Ace, CVS pharmacies where plants are sold. And what they do is they just highlight the products that Oh Wow endorses. And again, it's not about, you know, endorsing a particular product or not. It's really trying to, you know, create, again, less toxic ways to eradicate or manage pests. In some cases, like you say, it's a matter of you just have to do a mechanical method.
Or you just wait it out. With the aphids, I mean, the aphids are the biggest thing that they are under control.
Yeah.
They are under control. You just have to wait a week.
And sometimes it could be, you know, greater diversity or, you know, in your garden.
Or it could be you think there's something that you're going to spray for when the something isn't caused by something that spraying helps, like a blossom end rot. You know, there isn't any spray for that. That was an environmental action. It wasn't. Right. It wasn't a disease. There isn't any critter causing the problem. So.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
modification, right? Yeah. Awareness.
Awareness.
Yeah.
So, other than the residential, now I know you're the city of Davis. So, do you have situations where you have commercial places that are dumping chemicals into the storm drains? I wouldn't expect we'd... What? No. Okay. No, I told somebody not to call me at this time.
Yeah.
That's them. Okay. Sorry about that. I forgot to turn it off. So I would expect that you would have that in problems in agricultural areas or in industrial areas. But do we have that in the city? Do you run across that?
We essentially have no
dumping
real agricultural areas in the city. I mean, mm-hmm. we have, you know, some community gardens and obviously people mm-hmm. garden in their houses and homes
right.
and things like that. But there's no commercial
agriculture. But there are commercial factories or facilities.
Right, right.
And are they pretty well controlled, or do you find that there are problems in either people not knowing what they're supposed to do or sneaking in things that there shouldn't?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. It's really a matter of awareness again.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a few facilities within the city that are under the regulatory purview,
mm-hmm.
for lack of better expression, under a separate permit. And mm-hmm. I had meant to kind of describe permitting, because a lot of what drives what we have to do and monitor and look at and report on is driven by permits.
Mm-hmm.
There are three permits that regulate stormwater quality. And the whole intent of all these permits is to protect surface water throughout the state. Surface water meaning a local waterway, a creek, a canal,
mm-hmm.
That flows into a river. Now, a river like the Sacramento River, to make issues a little confusing, but there are things that they call waters of the state, and there are things that they call waters of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
A navigable waterway like the Sacramento River is considered waters of the U.S.
So there's extra federal rules that apply to that one, whereas Pewter Creek would be of state rules.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's roughly correct.
We don't need to get too detailed.
Yeah, but what I want to do is let people know is that ostensibly everything that we do in terms of stormwater quality gets its basis out of the Federal Clean Water Act.
Okay.
So it really gets passed on from the Fed EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, on to the state. And then the state is charged with enforcing these rules on its statewide basis. And all the states have their own agencies to deal with that. And they in turn then pass on to the counties and the local governments, a permit type process by which we also have to enforce essentially the Federal Clean Water Act. So
can I digress just a little
bit?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I don't know how much you know about everything. And so if I ask you something about something you don't know about, it's okay to say you don't
know. Sure,
How quickly does the state regulation and permitting and all that stuff change? In other words, there has to be a state process, and if it goes through either the governor's office or through the legislative office or something, there has to be something that is going to interpret the national rules and mm-hmm. And create the state mm-hmm. rules and then apply the state rules.
Yeah.
So would that be something that like if there's a rule there and it's in effect in January 1st, then it wouldn't change until the next January 1st? Or is it something that could change day to day? Or
So I think
you
I
see where I'm
where
going.
Yeah,
if the Clean Water Act were rescinded on the federal level, does that mean the state has to stop doing what it's doing? I don't want to say it that way because that's politics. What I want to say is, how long would it be before the state regulations were modified to reflect a change in the national? There has to be some time lag, isn't it? Is it like a year?
Well, okay. So let me answer with what I think I know
okay.
and things that I picked up in environmental law, in college.
Okay.
Consistency with federal regulations is required. We can't do anything that's less restrictive.
Right.
But we can do things that are more restrictive.
Okay.
And again, I'm not an attorney. But, you know, so I can't.
So if the law gets more restrictive on the federal level, we have to change. But if it gets less restrictive, we don't necessarily have to change.
That is how I've understood how things go. And that also works the same at the local level.
Right.
We have to be at least as restrictive as the state requirements, but we can be more restrictive if we can.
So we're talking minimums here.
Right.
Rather than maximums.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So here in the city, at least as stormwater quality goes, we enforce what the state requires.
Okay.
We don't go above and beyond.
All right.
Yeah. And, you know, we try to create, you know, a really friendly environment and an environment that facilitates both protecting private property rights as well as, at least in terms of stormwater quality, and also protects the interests of developers, you know, what they have the right to do. So it's a fine balance. And, you know, we work to achieve to serve both parties because that's what we're here to do.
So so we've talked about sediment and chemicals. Are there other pollutants that you have to be concerned about?
So typical ones that I see here in the city of Davis are, say, like pool water that gets discharged. You know, real common activity.
So another kind of chemical in the chlorine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Chlorine is one of them. It needs to be non-detectable, or maybe it has a little bit too much muriatic acid. It could have a too high or too low pH. So you need to be within a range of pH to be acceptable.
To dump it.
Right. And another concern would be water that's really green, really brown, or water
growing.
Yeah.
So if I have a pond on my lake and I decide to empty it, I can't just pump it out into the storm drain.
You can.
I shouldn't.
You shouldn't. Yes. Yeah. We don't have a permitting process for that, but you know, ultimately,
well, there's not that many ponds in people's yards either.
Right. Right. But you know, we are constantly getting calls. You know, people will, you know, be on the lookout. Many people are aware that you don't want to discharge water that's either, you know, again, too high or too low in pH, and you know, chlorine and you know, detectable levels of chlorine and or you know, is a funny looking color. So you know, just as rainwater should be clear, water that comes from the pool should be clear, but also should be free of chemicals. So what we try to do is make sure that we direct people to, as a last resort, discharge to the storm drain systems. But we really try to encourage them, whenever possible and feasible, to discharge the sanitary sewer. And there's ways to do that.
So the wastewater stream that comes out is going a separate place. So I could put that pool water into I could put it into the shower drain rather than into the driveway.
Right. You may not want to.
Yeah.
So, like, for example, a lot of people have a utility sink.
Uh-huh.
You know,
in
or
the
even
garage.
Yeah, or even say a wash a drain hose, you know, that comes out of the washer, it goes into a nice tube inside that. The garage or wherever you have your, you know, your washroom. There's often ways to discharge to those directly, and those can work pretty good. You know, a lot of people will hook up a hose to their filter pump and just do a reverse. A lot of pools have that. I'm not an expert on pools, but you know, a lot of people go through that process and discharge there.
Why would anybody have to drain a pool?
Well, sometimes, sometimes chemicals get out of whack. They can't get them back in control without actually draining the pool and then putting new water or fresh water back in.
I see.
You know, some of those problems, I couldn't tell you what they are exactly, but I've heard that story a number of times from residents. And in other cases, you may have something that you need to have repaired, right? You know, maybe you need to have the plaster redone or something like that. New tiles. I don't know. You know, there could be a lot of reasons why somebody
reasons
wants
to drain
do
a pool.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, they may have a leak and they're losing water.
Or they may be going to not have a pool anymore.
That too. Absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of different reasons for doing it. So we try to find ways that people can do that. In some cases, just one more point on that. Some cases, people have what they call a sanitary cleanout valve. And those are located usually somewhere between your house and the street.
Right.
The public street. And basically, that's just a way for you to access your sewer lines.
Right, in case you got a tree root growing there and you want to root it out.
Well, or Roto-Rooter, right, you know, in case you have a clog. And a lot of newer homes have them. Some older homes don't, and some just have nothing at all. And some of them we have records on, some of them we don't. So we try to help people locate their sanitary sewer cleanout, and that's a great place to discharge.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So other than that, any other pollutants that you come across that you want to tell us about?
You know, small projects that people do, you know, in and around their house.
So like you're talking about chemicals that should be taken to the hazardous waste place but get dumped on the drain instead?
Well, it could be that.
What?
It could be that. It may not be that. You can have, you know, small projects like small landscaping projects. In some cases, people will tear out a lawn, right? And they'll put something new in, you know, whether it be drought-tolerant landscaping or whatnot. In other cases, somebody may be doing an addition, you know, to their house. And in those cases, your disturbing soil becomes a small construction project, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Or
dumping paint or dumping
exactly.
things that shouldn't
get
dumped.
I was just going to go there. Yeah. You can have paint or maybe new concrete being put in, a new driveway. Washing down a driveway can often, you know, when they cure the concrete, can, you know, create problems. You start to...
So how do you wash your driveway if you're not allowed to wash your driveway?
That's a good question.
Yeah, it is.
Very, very good question. So there are methods. Generally, what we're always encouraging is dry cleanup method, right?
Okay.
And if you have, say, oil stains or something like that, there are some cleaners that you can use where you can do real small spot cleaning. And what you do is you'll put some sort of an absorbent material on top of that, like kitty litter is a real common one, and absorbs those chemicals back up. You can even try to do that with
that
oils.
In the trash.
Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
You got it. So that's a method. And again, it's just trying to educate people, you know, help create that awareness that, you know, hey, we've got something here and, you know, there are ways to treat this or clean it up or deal with it without using wet methods. Now, last resort, you know, and usually the only time we try to get to this is, you know, pressure washing. Pressure washing really is only used at least for public streets and sidewalks in the event of there being some sort of a safety hazard. But otherwise, we're going to use dry cleanup methods to the maximum extent possible.
Right.
And I would encourage residents essentially to do the same thing, if that makes any sense. If you have to create wash water that comes off the street or comes off your hardscape, you know, meaning like your driveway or your sidewalk, what you want to try to do is use as little water as possible so you really don't create a lot of runoff, right? I know that in some years past, I'd actually washed my car very carefully where I didn't have the ability to pull a car off and put it on some landscaping area, and I was able to create minimal amounts of runoff. And then there's even some alternative products. Well, that's another one of those issues. It's car washing, and soaps and so forth. Go ahead. You have a question.
Actually, I wanted to tell the listeners that you are listening to KDRT LP 95.7 here in Davis, California. And if you want to listen to us live online, you can always go to kdrt.org because we stream continuously. If it's going out over the air, it's going out over the internet too. Archives? Yeah, we've got those. Scheduled? Yeah, we've got those. Places to make a donation? We've got those. KDRT.org, that's your all-important information. The program is That's Life. My name is Lois Richter. Today I have Reese Rowland here, who is from the City of Davis, and we have been talking about stormwater pollution prevention and drains and all that other kind of stuff. So I thank you, Reese, again for coming and joining us and talking to us. So we've talked about a number of different kinds of pollutants and how to avoid them or whatever. Once the pollutants get into the system, though, is there anything that you do in the system? I mean, you say it's not processed. The water's not processed. But if you had, like, let's say in a neighborhood and suddenly there was a big spill of something and it's all running down in the storm drain, you know it's there, you know it's going to come out the other end, it's going to be yucky. Is there anything you can do to to stop things or block things or process small areas or anything like that? Does that ever happen?
Yeah, great question, too. So there are things that happen with sanitary sewer overflows. Mm. Again, this is outside my realm per se, but I do report on them. And our city's wastewater division within Public Works does work on those types of things. Mm-hmm. So like if we have reported a sanitary sewer overflow, we have a crew that goes out and responds to those. And what they can do in those cases is we have these big trucks. They're called vacuum or vacon trucks, and they can go out and they can actually stop the stormwater. They can plug the stormwater stream downstream of the DI, the drainage inlet that it might be going into, and then they can use these vacuum trucks and pull the effluent out.
And divert it to the wastewater.
It gets it gets picked up and it's held in a tank, and then it can be disposed of properly in the sanitary sewer waste stream again. And we report on those on a yearly basis, and we track, you know, essentially the volume that we might have on that. So that's one method of doing it. There are other things if we have spills, which are of a kind of a minor volume and either paint-based or oil-based type of a spill, we can handle small quantities up to 5 gallons.
So before it gets into the storm drain?
Even if it gets into the storm drain, we can actually clean some of that out. Now, larger volumes, we have to contact outside agencies for them to come out and clean those up. So we just don't have the capability at the city level to handle that much effluent. And, so, and in particular, other kinds of chemicals.
Right, beyond
the paints and oils and the sanitary sewer overflows.
So here we've got this storm drain system, and it's the rainwater and sprinklers and lawn watering and all that stuff, and it's running down and it's going out. Do you keep track as it comes out of the city what's in it? Do you keep track of what how we're doing?
Yeah, that's a great question, and our permit has changed over the years, and previously.
What do you mean our permit? We have a permit?
Yeah. So I was starting to get into that, and I think we got off topic somehow. But you know, there's the three permits that we have to that are out there that the state monitors or has created the authority to enforce that deal with different types of effluent streams from different types of uses. So we have something called the construction general permit. And I don't necessarily regulate that. I do, as part of our permit, I'm required to look at construction sites and enforce their requirements as part of, I guess you would say, partnering up with the state. But it's a separate permit. And all those construction sites that are large enough trigger coverage under the construction general permit. They have to apply for a permit. So we do the same thing for industrial sites. And as I was mentioning earlier, there's a couple industrial sites that we deal with currently that have to apply for coverage under the industrial general permit. There are other types of uses that are currently coming under the purview of the permit that we have to go out and inspect and look at on an annual basis and communicate where we see problems that, you know, there's potential for pollutant discharge and give them potential ways to address that. So those are the two other permits. Now, there's a third permit. Again, this is what they call the small or phase two, small MS4 general permit. And MS4 is an acronym standing for Municipal Separate Storm Sewer System.
So this is the permit that the city has for all of us residents collectively.
Residents as well as commercial, any discharge.
Anything that doesn't have one of those other permits.
Right. Well, even then, those guys are...
They're the subsumed within it?
Yeah. Those properties are still, you know, under the purview of the permit. So our general permit. And we have to pay an annual fee to discharge all the stormwater that comes off all the properties within the city and regulate the activities and monitor what's happening with respect to stormwater. So this is a really long roundabout way to get to your question, which was, do we monitor? You know, do we look at our discharge and see what's actually happening in it? You know, what kind of pollutants do we have in it? And the permit has evolved. We're in our second version of the general permit. And that's how we got into this tangent, right? You asked about the permit. What is that? So in the permit, it has, in this latest version, which became active in 2013, we're sunsetting essentially in 2018, although mm-hmm. if they don't give us a new version, we'll just keep running with this one, like mm-hmm. we did with the last version. They typically run on 5-year cycles. And there's where the regulations change. But what we look at is monitoring and sampling. So on the city's outfalls, these are areas where all of our water collects up and discharges to
leaves
a waterway.
The city.
It leaves the city, leaves okay. the city's boundary. Like, for example, I was mentioning earlier the northeast section of Wild mm-hmm. Horse Golf Course on the very northeast end of the city. There is Channel A, mm-hmm. and Channel A essentially exits the city at that point. And I look at water that collects in that that channel, that waterway, mm-hmm. and periodically I'll take a grab sample of it. I'll actually pull some of that water out, and some of it I can test right there on the site. And other cases, I have to send it off to a lab and have it sampled and analyzed.
How frequently I won't ask you about the requirements.
Yeah.
But generally, how frequently is it looked at? Is it like every day, every week, every month, every year?
Well, we've only kind of recently gotten into this ballgame. It's pretty expensive to do. It runs about mm-hmm. $300 to sample for about, I think we're sampling about 10 different pollutant constituents. Mm-hmm. So cost is a bit prohibitive, mm-hmm. and time to mm-hmm. do that is also prohibitive. So it becomes a very difficult thing to achieve. But what we have done is we are required at least to do a dry weather sampling. And then if we have standing water that we see or observe after rainfall events, we're also supposed to look at that and sample it and figure out, do we have something in there that's problematic? And for that, the state gives us within the permit a series of different constituents to look at, things like, say, for example, surfactants or soaps, the pH levels, the actual color mm-hmm. of the water.
There's salts.
Not salts.
Not actually. Minerals? Well, salts and minerals?
Salt. In one way, in that we call it electrical conductivity. Mm-hmm. So turbidity, which would be an indicator of suspended sediments in the water.
Mm-hmm. Turbidity means whether or not you can see through it.
Yeah, okay. Essentially, the clarity of the water. There's quite a few others. There's some mm-hmm. metals that we look at. I believe potassiums. And
so how are we doing?
So we've been doing pretty good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in other words, to get your thing. Now, one thing that I have added to the list is fecal coliform, which is, an indicator of bacteria from, say, a sanitary sewer type discharges. And we have a couple sites where we've found that in those discharge points, we have a level that's, higher than mm-hmm. probably what it should be. And what we're trying to do there is match what the state does in terms of wastewater stream. So, and I think I know the reasons for those, and we just haven't gotten there yet as to how to pinpoint, what those sources are. Mm-hmm. And they may be very difficult to get after. I mean, some of it might be because there's homeless people that are living along mm-hmm. A particular waterway,
or it could be the dog park.
It could be the dog park, yeah, and that's one of those things. That's one of those pollutants that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Although we haven't seen it in other places that drain, green belts and mm-hmm. open spaces. So, it could be also wildlife. Mm-hmm. There's sort of a problem adjacent to Julie Partansky Pond over on F Street mm-hmm. and the confluence of Channel A and F Street right there. There's a lot of wildlife in the pond, and that could be a reason for seeing a little bit more bacteria in the water.
And it right? isn't just in the pond. It's the geese grazing the grasses out, not in the pond, but around the outside, and that water runs off into the storm drains. It doesn't just run back into the pond because they're not in there.
Right.
So, yeah.
So
geese are prolific.
Yeah, yeah. We have within the permit what they call numeric action levels, which meaning, if we get a concentration of some particular pollutant, this should be an indication that we have maybe a problem upstream. Mm-hmm. And on
everything. Do you then go upstream and
that's
test
what we would do.
Other places?
But we haven't had anything that's really been an indicator other than, you know, the issue on bacteria.
Okay. And so we recently shifted from having well water to having surface water.
Right.
And so the water that people are watering their yards with has changed.
Right.
We know this very well, of course, because we mm-hmm. do a garden show. Mm-hmm. But has that changed what you're seeing in the stormwater? Have you seen, I mean, obviously the pH is going to be different.
Right.
Well, actually, the pH won't as much as the mineral and salt, so the electrodes.
Right. Electrical conductivity.
Yeah.
That
so
would
did you notice a big change when that happened?
I don't have data on that.
Oh?
Yeah. I just don't have data on that. Yeah.
Oh.
So,
wouldn't they have kept data back then?
We just haven't done sampling prior to this past year. So we don't have sampling prior to surface water.
That's interesting.
As opposed to utilizing surface water. Now, there are some places that still use some groundwater on occasion. So, you know, we could see something there. But you would definitely expect electrical conductivity to be an issue that would be different.
So why are we suddenly doing measurements that we never used to do?
Because it's required in the permit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's basically just complying. And it's a really good indicator then, you know, of what kinds of problems we might have, you know, within our watershed, meaning, mm-hmm. you know, within the city.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that's a lot of information. And I thank you so much for coming and talking to us about this. How did you get into doing this job? Are you new at this job since?
Well, I started out in about 2009, uh-huh. Made a change from being a urban planner. Academically, I'm an urban planner by trade, but uh-huh. I have a lot of science. I have a Bachelor of Science in Environmental Studies. And so, you know, it's not a big jump for me to go from mm-hmm. being a urban planner to being a stormwater quality professional, I guess you mm-hmm. would call it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've been involved in public work for, you know, public sector work for over 20 years.
And how long have you been in Davis?
I've been in Davis now for since 2002.
Okay,
so
that's a long time.
Yeah, pushing 16 years now.
Yeah. All right. So this stormwater situation, is there anything that you would like to tell the listeners, request of them to do or tell them to look out for or any other interaction that they would or should or you'd like them to have with you or whatever? Here's your chance. Put out a call.
Thank you very much for that. There, you know, in my travels, you know, and I get around the city a lot. You know,
on bicycle. He got here on bicycle.
Yeah, that's true. And I do. And I relish the chance to be able to actually get out, you know, and look at the city via bike. It's a mm-hmm. really good way to look at things. And it gives me some exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So there are really some common problems that I see on an ongoing basis.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them I haven't talked about, I mean, pet waste. Yes, absolutely pet waste. Be aware of pet waste, making sure you're carrying along bags with you and pick it up mm-hmm. and dispose of it properly in the trash can, in a closed bag. And you can actually even get mm-hmm. some, I guess they call them biodegradable, but they're...
And it does not go in the compostable wastes.
Right, exactly, yeah. And keep those out of the piles in the street.
Yep.
So that leads to another one, yard waste in the street. Mm-hmm. There are rules about that came about with our organics waste ordinance. Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly the title of it. But essentially, this time of year, and unless you get into, you know, the fall, you're supposed to put your trash, or excuse me, your yard waste out on the street only once a month at the beginning of the month.
Mm-hmm. And so only twigs and branches, not lawn clippings.
Well,
not little stuff.
Yeah.
And not rotten fruit. And
right.
There's other restrictions there.
Right. Yeah. Most of that you want to get into the organics bin, right?
Right.
And so the object is to not put it in the street, you know, where it can then mm-hmm. become part of the effluent stream. And again, we didn't even get into it, but yard waste is considered a pollutant because it creates a nutrient load that causes bacteria to grow in water and creates a biological oxygen demand, which is not natural in those waters.
Mm-hmm.
That's harmful to aquatic wildlife.
Okay.
So, and even aquatic plant life. So that's two items, pet waste, you get your yard waste. Also, yard waste, you know, keep it out of the path of travel of water in the curb and gutter.
Right.
And you don't want to put it out when it's really windy or when you're expecting storms to come. So, mm-hmm. you know, always be aware, cognizant of storm events when they're coming.
So basically, don't stick stuff down the drain.
Pretty much.
That's really what it comes down to. Don't put stuff on your lawn that's going to wash down there.
Yeah.
Don't dump things in the drain because you just don't want them anymore. Just basically keep it clean, folks. Keep it clean. Thank you very much for coming. This has been Reese Rowland. He was from the City of Davis talking to us about stormwater and all that stuff. My name is Lois Richter. The program is That's Life. I am so glad you joined us today. I hope you'll come back every Thursday at 1 o'clock. I'll be here, and maybe you will be too. If you want to know more about the schedules, go to kdrt.org. You can also listen to us streaming live on the internet there and all that other good stuff. All right, so let's see. 20 seconds of music. How's that? Sounds good to me.